Fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted! An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Great move to the right at the 50, cuts back to the left at the 40. He's loose at the 30, he's at the 20, the 10. Touchdown, Cardinals!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
All I know is last week at this time, Cardinals Underground was more like Cardinals Battleground. Darren's laughing now. A week ago at this time, and when Darren and Kyle, they're putting the war into War Room. I mean, I couldn't say anything over here without getting blown out of the water with, like, blowback. You guys were feisty. You were on edge. We were leading up to the draft. Apparently, you didn't get it out of your system, haggling around the War Room table before setting the top 120 board. I don't know what it was. I'm hoping we don't have a repeat, gentlemen. All right, be cordial.
You know what? It's interesting you bring that up, Paul, that you're thinking about last week's Cardinals Underground, because I actually have been thinking about March 7th and that episode of Cardinals Underground. I don't know if you recall this. I'm willing to bet you lunch that all four guys are gone by 12 and that Baker Mayfield is top 10.
I agree with you, so I'm not going to take that bet.
Oh,
I think it's possible that somebody drops to 15, but I would put it at under 50%, so I am not taking the bet.
Paul? Okay, I'll take the bet. I'll take the bet. Right. I'm going to count on something coming out that will undermine one of the candidates. So basically,
there you go.
The four studs, if anyone goes beyond number 12, I win.
You win. I owe you lunch.
I'll take that. You know what? Jamal Mahundro, you look me in the eye. Is that doctored? I honestly do not remember that whatsoever. I really don't remember.
It is not only not doctored. I went and sat through that whole podcast just to find the clip Holmes about it. Yes.
Oh my gosh. The man holds a grudge. I'm the one with the Italian last name, and he's holding a grudge over there. It's unbelievable.
It was close. You have the Cardinals to blame. If they don't move up, you probably fall. So.
That's right. Well, there you go.
Steve Kimo's you lunch when you owe Darren lunch.
You know, my sleep deprivation, it cost me my short-term memory, and so there you go. You guys, because I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't. There's no way I would have paid up because I had no recollection of that whatsoever. You know, so you had to prove it to me.
There you go.
Oh boy. Well, hashtag it can always get worse, and it just did. So there you go. Okay, Cardinals Underground. Darren wins. Did the Cardinals win in round one? What says you, Kyle?
Yeah, definitely. I thought it went pretty much perfectly. I'm a big proponent of rookie quarterbacks, getting a quarterback on a rookie contract, what that can do for your cap flexibility. Really, that's a main way to win in the NFL these days, is that five-year period when you have a rookie quarterback on that cheap contract. So I loved it. I think Josh Rosen was a guy who, going into the draft, I'm not a draft expert or anything, but I did like Josh Rosen a lot. And I'm if I was the Cardinals, I'd be very happy the fact that I barely gave up anything, a third and a fifth, were able to move up and get a guy who, by a lot of people, think that he's going to be a franchise quarterback, and I happen to be one of those people.
I would say I would agree with all those points. I mean, to me, there's a couple levels to this. The biggest thing is what they gave up or what they didn't give up. The fact that they didn't give up their second-round pick, that they didn't give up next year's first to get a possible franchise quarterback, I think is huge. We talked about it a million times that all these guys have some warts. But everybody said that on the field, it seemed like the only knocks against Josh Rosen were injury possibilities because he had the concussion and this personality thing, which is, I don't know, that never bothered me as much as some others. And for me, I was surprised a little bit the Giants didn't more seriously consider taking a quarterback at two, because for me, in this league, you want to, if you're up there at the top and there's quality candidates, you take that guy, especially with an older quarterback. And I know Saquon Barkley is a great player, but if I'm the Giants, I look very carefully at that. If I'm one of these other teams, I would have thought about trading up a little bit. I thought the Cardinals were fortunate that he was still on the board at 10 to even make the deal. There's no lock that says he's going to be the quarterback that you need him to be, but that you're in this position, I think it's a huge weight lifted off the organization and off Steve Keim's shoulders. And I thought you saw a little bit of that with the way he kind of reacted. I think you can kind of tell that you can kind of move on a little bit with this huge piece in place.
I mean, there's the cost benefit of every move you make, and the cost, let's just start right there, because you guys are absolutely right. You gave up a third and a fifth, and what, Buffalo gave up a pair of second round picks to go from 12 to 7?
Yeah.
I saw Baltimore traded back up to get Lamar Jackson 32nd overall. I think they gave up more, if memory serves, to go from the middle of the second round up to number 32 overall than the Cardinals did to get to the number 10 pick overall.
I can't remember that conversation, but I know the Saints moved up for Marcus Davenport and gave up a future first rounder, I think from 27 to 14, but they didn't get a quarterback. Wow. It's an edge rusher, and they must have loved him, but yeah, usually when you're moving up, you're usually giving up at least a second and a lot of times a first.
All right, so for everything that New England did for the San Francisco 49ers and the Jimmy G trade, right? I mean, just the absolute gift that was Jimmy G for a second-round pick. Well, guess what? The Cardinals need to send a thank-you pick to the Oakland Raiders, some sort of thank-you card of some sort to the Oakland Raiders. I don't know exactly how they did that. Maybe it's just flat-out having the poker face and waiting to the last second, you know, not being like the Jets and panicking and going and giving up the house just to go from 6-3.
What we're never going to know really is exactly what kind of play the Raiders had on that number 10 pick, because I think that means a lot. If they didn't get a lot of other run for somebody wanting to come get 10, then I think maybe the Raiders did a good job, because what we know now is they wanted Colton Miller to tackle. And if you knew he was going to be there at 15, because no one was going to take him that or anytime soon. So if you can get an extra third round and an extra fifth round pick to get the guy you're going to take at 10, that's absolutely worth it. And I think if you look at it from that perspective, it makes sense that the Raiders did it if there was no other play that they were getting on that pick.
I wonder, though, if they would have tried it a week earlier, 2 weeks earlier, a month earlier, what would have been the price tag if somebody wanted to get up to 10?
I'm going
to
say, in a vacuum, you could say it would be larger, but the problem is the reason it's a valuable pick is because Josh Rosen is on the board and somebody wants to go get him. The problem with dealing it a week earlier or a month earlier is you don't know who's going to be on the board. I mean, there was a point where we were saying four of these quarterbacks could go in the top five picks. Then 10 doesn't mean jack squat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem with trying to deal it earlier.
But what did the Bills give up to get to 12 before they then went to 7, right?
Cordy Glenn.
Okay.
So you gave up a left tackle and then 2 second rounders. They got up to 12 from Cordy Glenn, and then they got up to 7 because of the 2 second rounders. So, yeah, I mean, you don't know how the negotiations went, but I agree with you, Paul, where if you're the Raiders, you bluff and say, hey, we got somebody else on the line saying we're going to move up and get this guy at 10 and see if the Cardinals will give a little bit more. Because I was definitely surprised that the compensation was only a 3 and a 5. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's funny because you were the one who put out the blog in the previous week where it said on the trade value chart, and again, that's all relative, but the trade value chart said that the Raiders pick was worth a first and a third of what the Cardinals had.
Yeah.
So when you say sweeten it, maybe the fifth round pick was the sweetener.
Right. I don't think that's enough. I would have thought if no quarterback was there and somebody wanted to move up for a regular position player, I think a third and a fifth would have made sense. But the fact that it was Josh Rosen and the Dolphins were right there. To me, I thought when they announced the trade, I thought it was going to be at least a second and a third or something like that. So I thought the Cardinals did a great job.
All right, so our Jim Omahunter just came up with the information here. The Ravens to get into number 32 overall, right, and they get that fifth-year option on Lamar Jackson. So it's enticing for the Ravens. But they gave up their second-round pick this year, a fourth-rounder, and then a 2019 second-rounder to the Eagles for number 32 and then another fourth-rounder. Think about that. Because I remember seeing that trade coming across the ticker when it was at the end of the first round going, whoa, the Cardinals gave up a lot less to get up to number 10. And look, as Steve Keim said, they were prepared. They are ready. Now, timing's everything. They weren't aggressive until actually, you know, their guy was on the board and seemingly available. In fact, Keim talked about that to the media after round one.
Primary goals this offseason was to be aggressive, not only in filling this roster with our specific needs, but to be aggressive acquiring quarterbacks that we talked about at the combine. And that would not only be in free agency, but in the draft process as well. And today, I think, was an indication of how we felt about Josh Rosen trading from 15 to 10, and in our opinion, grabbing one of the best players in this draft.
There you go, Steve Keim. And you know, look, you talk about the player that is Josh Rosen. You guys brought it up earlier, you know, and okay, maybe there are a couple of question marks, whether it's injuries and or personality. Okay, that's obviously, you know, subject to review and a very subjective thing in and of itself. But every single quarterback had a lot of question marks. There wasn't an Andrew Luck. There wasn't a Peyton Manning in this draft. So to me, you can look at maybe the shortcomings or the weaknesses supposedly on Josh Rosen compared to the weaknesses or potential pitfalls of the other top three quarterbacks that went ahead of him. And honestly, I'd rather have the question marks on Josh Rosen's scouting report than the other guys.
I think the argument could be made that a lot of different people had these guys pegged in a different way. And I'm guessing a few people might have had Josh Rosen as their number one quarterback, and a lot of them probably had him as number two or number three. So the way it fell, we don't know how the Cardinals ranked Josh Rosen compared to the other three, but clearly they were excited enough about him to move up and grab him. And I just think it was a home run because, like we're talking about, you didn't give up a lot. You moved up five spots, and you didn't give up a lot for moving up five spots, but there were also people thinking you were going to have to move up 10 to the Broncos or the number six to the Colts. And at that point, you definitely would have given up a first rounder next year and more than that. So the fact that Steve Keim was able to wait, and that's got to be tough as every single pick is going, not knowing if that fourth quarterback is off the board. And if they are, you know how mad the fan base is going to be that, again, you didn't get a quarterback in the first round. So it was incredible job to stay patient, and the fact that he got him was just perfect.
In fact, I had a chance to interview team president Michael Bidwill in person over at the Cardinals draft party a little bit after round one, and he admitted not only to yours truly but everyone in attendance there, it was very, very tense as you got past pick 5 and 6 in the Cardinals war room. Now we're getting near pick number 10, and that's where we're going to go all access, gentlemen. This is where Cardinals Flight Pan, if you haven't seen it, oh boy, is this the week to tune in. You go to facebook.com/Cardinals Flight Plan. It's all access. It's documenting the Cardinals' entire offseason, yes, including getting into the war room when the Cardinals were on the clock.
Oakland's on the clock. Buckle your seatbelt here.
Hey, Reg. So, again, we'll give you 15, 79, and 152, which is our fifth. You do it? Okay, Reg, appreciate you. Congrats, man.
Guys, there's going to be a trade.
Okay, send it in.
It's going to be Josh Rosen, quarterback, UCLA.
I'm going to call him right now.
We're going to get on the phone with him, and then I'll call you back. How many minutes do we have? 7 minutes. Okay, I'll call you back.
Josh, Steve Keim with Cardinals. How you doing? Ready to come out to the desert? Congrats, my man. We just traded up with the Raiders. I'm standing here with Coach Wilkes and Michael Bidwill, and I'm telling you, man, that visit that you made was a real impression on us. Future's all about you, my man. Here's Coach Wilkes.
Josh, congratulations, man. How you feeling? You're going to do some great things for us for a long time. You excited? Hey, I want you to talk to Michael Bidwill.
Josh, Michael Bidwill, how are you? Very well. Congratulations. We're excited to bring you out to Arizona and make you a Cardinal. So Steve just said it to you, but, you know, your visit made a huge difference, and we're excited. So we were impressed with you and impressed with you with what you did on the field, but really impressed when we got a chance to spend some time with you. So, all right, enjoy, and we'll turn it in here in a couple minutes. Okay, thanks. Bye.
That is great stuff. Right out of the Cardinals war room, that's exactly how it went down when the Raiders and then the Cardinals ended up at number 10 overall. That was the final stages of the trade being executed. Welcoming Josh Rosen, you heard it, the future is all about you, said Steve Keim, and then Michael Bidwill finishing up. And I'll just share this quick anecdote from the Cardinals draft party, and as we were talking to him about Josh Rosen, and I was interviewing Michael Bidwill, and I asked him about, all right, he's a member of the Y generation, and Steve Wilkes addressed it in the post-game or the post-draft press conference, and, you know, that's the way the players are right now. They want to know why, and Michael actually cut me off. He said, that's fine. That's the way I am. I want to know why things are happening, why this, why that, why in which way are we proceeding in that manner, and in that regard, you know, it's a good fit. At first glance, it does seem to be a good fit. Josh Rosen with the front office, Josh Rosen with the coaching staff.
I think so. I think this organization has, you know, since I've been here starting in 2013, Steve Keim has always been willing to draft guys like this that you know, have a little bit of individuality, have their own personality, aren't just, you know, in lockstep with everything and don't say much. I think they're okay with that. And that's a good thing when you bring in a guy like Josh Rosen, who does have a strong personality. I was out in Dallas for the first round and talked to him probably 15, 20 minutes after the pick. And he was, like he told everybody, he was mad. He thought he was going to go top three. He wasn't happy that he dropped, but he also said, you know what, it's probably a good thing that I dropped because this is going to motivate me my entire career. He said, maybe I would have taken things for granted if I went that high. And you can tell he's an intelligent guy. The wheels were already turning, and he's going to use that as something like a chip on his shoulder because he wants to prove to everybody that they made a mistake in not picking him number one, two, or three.
It'll be interesting to see, obviously, how this plays out early with Sam Bradford and exactly how that goes. Although, again, and you mentioned Flight Plan, which is dropping Wednesday on Facebook, and then Thursday morning it'll be on azcardinals.com. But the next episode with all this stuff on it, one of the parts is going to talk about how Sam Bradford the next morning texted Josh Rosen and told him essentially, I'm an open book, and whatever you need help with, let me know and I will help you. And I think that's an important thing to know, that those two guys are going to have a working relationship, because it is tough when you're a starter or perceived starter like a Sam Bradford, and then you draft a guy that high. But, you know, when you start looking at this franchise's history in terms of taking quarterbacks, and we've talked about this before, I mean, the last time they took one in the top three rounds, much less the first round, was 2006 when they took Leinart. And it's been that long. And I mentioned earlier about the weight being off of Steve Keim's shoulders. And, you know, they've caught lightning in a bottle a couple times. Kurt Warner obviously worked out very well, although that wasn't a for sure thing when he first got to Arizona. And then obviously Carson Palmer, again, thank you Raiders. When he showed up, Steve Keim's got really owes a lot to the Raiders for his quarterback since he's been GM. But
and Jared Valdir.
Exactly. So, I mean, we got to see it play out on the field again. But you got to have this guy. You have to have a guy. It worked out perfectly for the Cardinals. But all this teeth gnashing of where this team was in terms of quarterbacks and a roster back in January has now kind of changed quite a bit. And I think the perception is different, and they're in a good place, and this is where you want to be going forward.
Well, it's remarkable to hear Trent Dilfer, the analyst on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM, the Cardinals flagship radio station, right after the pick was made. And he said, watching Rosen and Sam Bradford in practice, he said, is going to, quote, be like art, end quote. Just they're both masters of throwing the football. They make it look effortless. And we know in any walk of life, anything you do, anybody who makes it look easy is usually really good at something. And those two guys are going to get out there. And you know what? We're actually going to enjoy watching some of the OTAs and the mini camps and other things going on. The other thing he said was that, hey, the Cardinals won the draft. He is all in on Josh Rosen. And that night, Josh Rosen had this to say, right, with a first impression.
I want to win Super Bowls. I want to be the winningest quarterback in the history of the National Football League. In that pursuit, everything else kind of takes care of itself, the stats and whatever and everything in between. To end your season and be the only team that's actually happy with how the season went, it's an addicting feeling, and I'm just in a nonstop, endless pursuit of that feeling.
Yeah, the Cardinals added a A1 soundbite into the locker room as well, which we'll enjoy.
I heard him, you know, I didn't know a lot about him. You hear the noise. I mean, honestly, I thought it was going to be tough for the Cardinals to maneuver to get one of these quarterbacks, and so I didn't think it was going to be that possible. And quite frankly, if it was possible, I didn't think it was going to be Josh Rosen.
How'd you win the stinking bet? How did that happen?
Well, I said they were all going to go top 12. I didn't know if they were going to be able to move up because I thought it was going to cost too much, quite frankly. Okay. And if somebody did end up dropping, I thought maybe Josh Allen because of the inaccuracy issues. But I again, didn't know a lot about him. I know the first time I got to hear him in depth, as it were, was at the combine, and he got up there, and I'm expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, but you hear all the noise, and then I heard, and I'm like, okay, this guy sounds pretty good. I mean, I don't know what problems people would have. And then he came here, and it was all the same thing. You know, if you say what you have to say, okay, you're allowed to have your opinion.
But you know, some of his unadulterated opinions in print maybe look a little more forceful than they sound. Does that make sense? And because when he delivers them, he delivers them in a reasonable, rational, intellectual,
like Patrick Peterson,
you know, an intelligent manner. But then when you see him in print, you're right. With Pat P, sometimes he said a few things that jump off the page. But when you're standing in front of his locker or you're there in person, it's not nearly as polarizing.
I guess I understand that. But I also have to – I got to be honest. I look at where we are as a culture and a society, and I'm wondering, is it really that he's that opinionated, or is it that everybody gets so pissed off so
we're
quickly
too sensitive.
If it's not what they think is right?
Okay.
He's not super opinionated compared to a regular person, but when the kind of the status quo in the locker room is a lot of cliches a lot of time and a lot of – you know,
this is true.
You're just looking at football, and if you, and one times other things are brought up, a lot of players will shy away, which is totally fine. If they don't want to talk about whatever is going on in the world, you know, you respect them for that because their job is football, and you're talking to them as a, you know, a sports reporter, and that's what they want to talk about. But Josh Rosen, if you ask him a question, he's willing to answer it honestly, and that's, people call him polarizing, but it, to me, he's just honest. I mean, you ask him something, he answers. I don't think that should be viewed negatively.
You know what, though? If Rosen went to the Jets or the Giants and he was in New York, and he's dealing with all those members of the media who can get pretty pointed with the questions, and he's more apt to give an honest answer than not, that could be trouble in a place like New York,
I mean,
especially when they splash it around the back pages.
Yeah, he's going to create headlines. He probably will here when he says things because he is a quarterback, and even if, you know, once it goes national, it goes on Twitter, and people pick up on it, and it'll become headlines again. But to me, I mean, he's never gotten any legal trouble. His biggest thing are he has controversial words, which to me is not a big deal. I mean, I think more people should give their opinion. I like it when you give your opinion, even if I don't agree with it. So I think he's an interesting character, and I think he's going to come in, and if he plays well, obviously that thing is going to play nicely, and people are going to love the honesty. And if he struggles, then it's going to be a quote-unquote problem, whatever.
This is going to be, I mean, what's the difference? Okay, he's a little bit more out there right now, but I mean, Tom Brady says a couple things, and all of a sudden it's like, or Aaron Rodgers. Now, I know that those guys are super accomplished, but Aaron Rodgers, you know, I know a handful of guys that cover the Packers, and Aaron Rodgers has been saying stuff since he walked into the league. You know, it didn't get as much run because he was a backup quarterback, and because he got drafted a little bit later, I don't think people were paying as close attention, and also 10 years ago, the internet wasn't quite what it was now. So,
and he's still in Green Bay. It's not New York City, even with the internet.
I mean, again, I just think.
But if there's a comp for the personality of Josh Rosen, it might be Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
The
and maybe that's why they get along so well and they're friends.
Yeah. That's, you know, and look, you guys are on board. He's on board with the AZ. The feeling's mutual.
I think I'm going to a really, 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 really good football team with a lot of really good players. I mean, it's everything any young quarterback could have possibly dreamed of. A really good veteran quarterback in the room to learn from, a running game, one of the best receivers to ever play football, period, and a solid defense. I really don't think I could have wished a better situation.
When you see some of the behind-the-scenes footage, and you'll see it on Flight Plan, just him before the press conference, he's smiling, he's comfortable, he's not gripping. You know, how many guys in that situation, you're going to meet a brand new media market and that auditorium is packed and your parents are there and your GM is there and the owner is there and you got to meet the media and the first impression. And he handled it all with aplomb, did he not?
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about him is from the very beginning, he said, this is who I am. I'm confident in who I am. What you see is what you get. And even like Darren was talking about going back to the combine, that was his message at the combine. He said, I'm going to go into these meetings with all the coaches and GMs and just show them my personality. So it sticks to exactly what we've thought about him. Like you said, he's very confident, very easygoing. I mean, he wasn't nervous at all. And it's something that I think is definitely Josh Rosen. He's not this way in front of the cameras, and then if you get him on the side, he's completely different and a jerk or something. I mean, he's just who he is.
And that's how you get comfortable in a situation, is you are who you are. The easiest way to be nervous in a situation like that is knowing you're going to go out and try and not say certain things or not be yourself and try and hold to a character that you're not used to being. If you're going to be yourself, what does it matter? And again, he's not sitting there saying, you know, everybody wanted to make this big deal about how all these guys in front of him were mistakes and people are all mad. Why would you say that? Blah, 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 blah. If Baker Mayfield had fallen to 10th, I guarantee you he would have been saying the same thing.
It's scorched earth.
He was saying the same stuff at the combine before we even knew what order everybody was going to be at. Baker Mayfield was already grumpy. So, I mean, I think it's overblown. I think people want to hate for hate's sake, quite frankly. And bottom line, it comes to this, and you guys both kind of touched on this. The dude goes out, and I was talking to a former very high-profile player about this. If he goes out and throws for 350 every game, nobody's going to care. And those that do care are going to be fans of the other team that he's ripping up. And if he goes and he struggles, then this fan base is not going to like him. And he could say every cliche in the book and never say one controversial thing, and they're still not going to like him.
Well, he did amend his earlier comment on draft night. You know, not 9 mistakes, but 3 mistakes. Just for the record, he did amend that. He wants a scoring change on that one, the 3 quarterbacks ahead of him. And Kyle, you laugh. I'm laughing because you were right there in Dallas. You're probably standing a few feet away from him when they put him on the satellite uplink. Mm-hmm. And I'm interviewing him on stage, and he's addressing thousands of Cardinals fans. The Red Sea's out there. And once again, he had a smile. He's totally comfortable. I mean, I can tell you right now, whether it's Damon Buchanan or DJ Humphreys or Robert Kendiche, all the kids we've gotten up there, first-round picks, I mean, you got a camera in your face. That's all you're looking at, a white light beaming in your eyes. They tell you you're talking to thousands of Cardinals fans out on the Great Lawn at University of Phoenix Stadium. Guys are a little nervous. Mm-hmm. He wasn't. Yeah. And then when I asked him the obligatory, geez, how do you feel? You just got drafted 10th overall. And he said, well, I feel great now, but I'm pretty pissed off leading up to that pick. And right, I mean, everyone's like, whoa, what's that? I mean, I don't know how you reacted, but like, okay, there's a follow-up in there somewhere, Josh. Wow, what's going on?
Yeah, and, you know, right, I was watching him talk to Susie Colbert, and I think it was Deion Sanders, a couple of the big stations right after, and he didn't really have this look of elation on his face, and he didn't say I was mad, but he wasn't exactly super happy. And then I talked to him, and he just blurted it out, and then he continued to do so to you and to the conference call and everybody. But that was the moment it's like, okay, this guy is just going to tell you exactly what he thinks. And it was funny, right before the talk back to the draft, he had to make sure, he's like, okay, it's live. Okay, you could just see the wheel spinning, like, okay, I can't say any swear words on this thing because I'm going live to the draft.
But you know what? I love guys who care. I love guys who care enough that it matters to them, that you know, they're that competitive, because you need that in this league.
And what's funny is that was one of the knocks on him. He doesn't care about football. He doesn't want to. He's got money in his pocket, and he's going to cash out early, and he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. That's what cracks me up.
And dropping to 10 is great motivation. If that was going to become an issue, the fact that you've got 3 quarterbacks ahead of you, it's going to drive him for a while.
So there he was at the press conference. The next day, less than 24 hours later, we all had a chance to ask him questions. My question was along the lines of, all right, how daunting is this challenge, the prospect of being a future franchise quarterback?
The biggest thing is knowing that I have careers on my back. That I have families, I have kids, and if I don't play well and I don't pan out, people have to get new jobs. People get fired and things happen. So you've got a lot on your shoulders, but I wouldn't have come out. I would have left college early if I didn't think I was ready for it.
And to me, that is an answer that is wise beyond its years.
Yeah.
That he's, I mean, you just got drafted. It's all about you. If your ego at that point has every chance to run amok, and you're thinking about those around you and how, you know, your future is going to impact everybody else's future because you're the trigger man at quarterback.
He's not wrong.
No.
I mean, this is we talk about where we stand in May here. Is they've got their future franchise quarterback and everything's good, and you'll be that way for a couple of years regardless of how things go, because you got to let them have time to kind of get into this thing, but eventually the rubber's got to meet the road, and he's going to have to perform, and if he doesn't, yeah, you're going to have issues. Now, if whatever happens and he skids out or whatever, but they keep Sam Bradford around and Bradford stays healthy, kind of like the Matt Leinart Kurt Warner thing. I mean, Matt Leinart could have cost people jobs. That pick could have ultimately cost people jobs. I mean, Denny Green got fired not because of Matt Leinart. And it could have been a problem going forward. But because Kurt Warner ended up rebounding, it worked out pretty well. So, I mean, again, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. But ultimately, yeah, this is a really crucial pick. And the Cardinals need it to pan out.
Right now, it's Sam Bradford's job to lose, we think. Here's Josh Rosen on Sam Bradford.
Sam Bradford's an awesome quarterback, and if If the team thinks he should be the starter, I'm a team first guy. I'll support him with absolutely everything I have. Maybe if I was a freshman in college, I would have come in a little bit more cocky and arrogant and think I can do my thing. But I think I've matured, and I think you have to understand the situation you're in, and you got to be a team first guy.
Here's the intriguing thing to me is former college head coach Jim Mora was on NFL Network and said that Rosen, quote, has an immediate path to starting, end quote, with the Arizona Cardinals, that he started as a true freshman at UCLA. And this is Mora now. With all due respect to Sam Bradford, I think Rosen has a legitimate shot to be the Cardinals starter when the regular season begins. That he can beat out Sam Bradford, which I find dubious at best just based on experience and a track record of rookies. I don't care how talented you are. But if Sam Bradford is healthy, we know he can spin it. He was NFC Offensive Player of the Week last year in his opener. I find that hard to believe. I'm just sharing what Jim Mora shared on NFL Network.
I agree with you. I think when you look at Sam Bradford, the issue hasn't really been, you know, his ability. It's always been the injuries. So I see where you're coming from where, you know, if he comes in, he's the veteran. He's got the really good arm, Sam Bradford does, and I think he's definitely got the inside track on that. At the same time, they're both coming into a new offense, which I think helps Rosen because Sam Bradford is only a month ahead of him because they've only been on the field for a little bit and doesn't know a bunch more. So, you know, if you handicap it, obviously Sam Bradford will be the heavy favorite to win it. But, you know, Josh Rosen, I think it's a legitimate thing if he comes in because of how polished he is. He's not a project as much like a Josh Allen. People think he's more one of the more ready-to-play quarterbacks. He would have to set the world on fire, but I think Josh Rosen does have that type of talent where if everything clicks immediately, it could start becoming a conversation.
If we're talking about day one, like game one at home against Washington, I think it's a long shot. But again, as we see what happens, ultimately things change very quickly. I'm not even going to go back to last year with Mike Glennon and Mitchell Trubisky or Tom Savage and Deshaun Watson. I'm going to go back to Matt Leinart. Matt Leinart, Denny Green came out and said, we want Matt Leinart to not play a down in 2006. We don't want him to play. Kurt Warner's our quarterback. He's been around this league. He's won MVPs. He's our quarterback. Why would we put Matt Leinart out there?
And then it was Atlanta when he got in, right?
And you got through 3.5 games and Kurt fumbling 10 times in 3.5 games before not only Matt Leinart got in the game, but he permanently replaced Kurt for the rest of the season, which is an incredible story in itself that Kurt ended up coming back to do what he did. But the point being that Sam Bradford could end up being the starter when the season starts, and Josh Rosen could go in. If this team struggles mightily, if Sam Bradford does okay, but the team starts struggling and they lose games, maybe the decision is made, hey, we might as well put him out there because we're not going anywhere this year and we need to see what we have. You know, you don't know exactly how it's going to play out. There are multiple ways Josh Rosen could find himself on the field this year that don't necessarily react completely negatively on Sam Bradford. It's just the circumstances of the situation. But I do think that Sam Bradford ultimately, if he stays healthy, is going to be this team's quarterback. I really believe that's what's going to happen.
By all accounts, the one thing that Rosen definitely does not lack is confidence. And in addition to that, he actually navigated through three different systems at UCLA in 3 years. You know, Mora was his head coach. He started as a true freshman, the first guy in modern UCLA football history to start as a true freshman at quarterback week one, game one. You know, he led the second biggest comeback in college football history against A&M. I mean, there's a lot on the resume that gives him confidence. And look, he's not the same kid who was this heralded recruit and won the California State title when his team actually beat De La Salle and they went 16-0 that year, something crazy like that. Here's Rosen.
I was definitely an arrogant 18-year-old, and between the years of 18 and 21, I grew a lot, and you only get one chance to make a first impression. And my first impression was as a cocky 18-year-old who got handed the keys to a major historic FBS university or their football team. I'd say I've grown a lot since then. I made a bad first impression, and some people, that's all they ever heard of me from then. So they formed their opinion off of that sole thing, and they didn't want to acknowledge that I actually did grow up over those 3 years.
First of all, I want to say, going back to what you're talking about with the different offensive coordinators, I feel like that's all we talk about with quarterbacks anymore, whether it's Sam Bradford or Blaine Gabbert or Josh Rosen. Does anybody have an offensive coordinator more than a couple years in a row anymore?
I mean,
I don't think so.
Those are the numbers we need, Kyle. Can you get on that? Give us a power poll of the offensive coordinators of the longest tenure.
The other thing I think of this stuff, and I thought he said all the right stuff, and I don't know if he grew up. I haven't been around him, and he sounded fairly mature every time I interacted with him the other day. And I will say that, so if he thinks he's really good, or he thinks he can dominate, or whatever, we see this all the time. Tyrann Mathieu is tweeting it all. Tyrann Mathieu a few weeks ago was telling everybody how, even though he didn't say this, but he clearly struggled a little bit last year, yet he was saying he was better than every defensive back on Dallas's roster. You know, Patrick Peterson talks about how he's the best cornerback in the league all the time. And he's been saying that almost since the day he walked in. Guys walk into the league all the time talking about how great they are.
Even Johnny Manziel said once upon a time, let's wreck this league via text.
I don't, you know, would I necessarily do wreck. It? I don't know if I would do it, but to make it sound like Josh Rosen is like way out of his lane for saying that compared to other players, I just think is mind-boggling to me.
And it was cool catching up with his mom on the second day of the draft on Friday. Came back and talked to her about Josh when he was younger, and she said this has always been him. He'd be in class and he'd be blurting out the answers, and he'd be asking questions when he's not supposed to. She said he's always been this big kid with this big personality, and he can't help it. And when he got to UCLA early on, that burned him because he didn't realize how much bigger his profile was and the fact that people were paying attention to him. So he did things, didn't think about it, and got in a little bit of trouble. And now he's more measured, where he'll still make these statements, but he knows the impact they'll have. So I think he's matured to the point where he's not going to do things and get people riled up unless he knows what he's doing. I think he's got some intelligence, and he'll tell you what he thinks, but he's not going to like poke a bear, you know, the day before a game or something and give somebody bulletin board material, something like that. He's just answering questions, but he's definitely intelligent enough to know what he's doing.
And there's obviously that one question about how much he loves the game, and then he was asked, all right, if there's a misconception about you, and well, that's where he went.
The purpose of winning football games is not the fact that it's proving I have love for the game. It's just people stop asking. So, I mean, whatever the answer to literally any question anyone could possibly have about me is winning football games, because then they just stop asking the questions in the first place. You don't really ever have to answer questions if you're winning football games.
No doubt. And I guess my point on him is, you know, whether he's ready or not to compete for a starting spot, I consider that a complete long shot. I'm with you on that, Darren. I'm just saying, the book on him is that the moment is not too big. Mm-hmm. And when you look at like maybe a Josh Allen in this draft process and on draft night, the moment looked pretty big for Josh Allen.
Yeah.
The moment looked pretty big for Sam Darnold. Baker Mayfield, maybe not so much. Josh Rosen, not so much. These guys have this supreme confidence, whether it's warranted or not, we don't know. We'll find out. But they definitely believe in themselves, and maybe that's half the battle when you're a rookie.
And Rosen, who was the number one quarterback recruit by some recruiting sites and went to UCLA, like you said, a huge program. He's been in the bright lights for a long time. So like you said, Paul, this isn't going to affect him being this big star in the NFL.
And if he needs a slice of humble pie, his first-round contract is 4 years, about $18 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He doesn't even make as much in his immediate family. His dad is like a renowned surgeon. I'm guessing his dad's going to make more than 18 over the next 4 years.
Reminds me of the old stories. I'm getting a little bit, but Bill Laimbeer, the former NBA player, it took him, he was halfway through his NBA career before he made it more than his dad did, because his dad
what
was
did his dad do?
I can't remember off the top
business
of my head.
Businessman of some sort?
He like grew up in this mansion, and he went to high school like on a cliff overlooking the ocean, and it was like...
Right, went to he didn't go to Pepperdine, but something like Pepperdine.
Yeah,
where he went to school.
Like, for high school.
Yeah,
he went to Notre Dame for
that's
college,
right. That's so, right. Yeah. You're right. That's right. I do remember that. Oh, my God. All right. Well, look, and speaking of high schools, there's our segue to Saguaro High School and the Cardinals' next draft
pick.
That's
an unfortunate high school.
And that would be an easy over there. You know, we can't judge a kid by his high school. In fact, that's not us. That's
if I went to Chaparral.
That's Steve Keim.
Christian is a guy that Coach and I've talked about for quite some time, being a local product. Certainly followed his career, and not only is he a great player on the field, but he's certainly a class act off. Fits our DNA that Coach has talked about over and over. Not only a very good receiver, dynamic player, but also adds value in the return game.
And I'm definitely going to defer to you guys on Christian Kirk, because I have a feeling you covered him in the high school a little bit, didn't you?
Yeah, I covered him 1 year when he was just a freshman at Saguaro. DJ Foster was a senior that year. I covered Saguaro for several years, but that was the last year, I think, before I came to the Cardinals and started working here. But Christian Kirk, I remember he played against Chaparral, Darren's alma mater, and those were like the two big storied, you know, football teams in Scottsdale. They're two of the best teams in the state, and the Saguaro coach decided to rest all of his starters because it was the last game before the playoffs. Huge controversy, but he sat every single one of his varsity guys except Christian Kirk because he was a freshman. So he was playing with JV guys next to him, and still, like, against one of the best teams in the state with all their varsity players, Christian Kirk was still the best player on the field. And you could tell this kid was 14 years old with no help, literally JV guys all around him, and he was still zipping around people. So people loved DJ Foster at that point, but then it's like, wow, Christian Kirk might be the next coming, and now it turns out that, you know, he could be even better than Foster.
You know, as we're going to Channel 15, and we were doing a story on Kyle Allen and Mark Andrews at Desert Mountain, and there was like a passing league, and there was another team over there, and a bunch of kind of all-star kids kind of gathered around, and there was this one kid, everybody kept going up to this one kid, and this kid's getting a lot of respect from all the other players. I'm like, who is this kid? He wasn't huge or anything, no. You know, 5'10".
He still isn't.
No, and I'm like, who is this kid? And then once they started the pass, like, oh, look at that kid move. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, he was lightning all over the field. He was playing DB, he was playing receiver, and now you realize why he had the street cred of everybody on that field, and that was Christian Kirk.
You know, to get – and so many people were making the drawing the line of, hey, maybe you could get him in the second round, maybe you could get him in the second round, and I didn't think he'd last till the 15th pick of the second round, so it worked out well. And I do think some things broke right for him to end up here. I think if the right cornerback had been on the board in the second round, they probably would have gone in that direction. But that being said, I think Christian Kirk brings – something exactly what this team needs. First of all, a dynamic return guy, which we haven't seen in a while. I mean, obviously everybody knows what Patrick Peterson did in 2011, but that's been gone for a long time, with all due respect to Pat. And the possibility of adding that part to special teams is also knowing what kind of emphasis that Steve Wilks is putting on special teams. I think that intrigues me. And then obviously bigger picture on a lot of levels, you know, Larry Fitzgerald is still there. He's getting older. At some point, he's going to be gone. I mean, what a fantastic story if the guy who to pick up the baton in that room and be a longtime Cardinal star wide receiver would be a local kid who, by all accounts, is a great kid, great to be around, a good person. I mean, when you're looking for somebody to follow up Larry Fitzgerald, that would be important. And in the short term, if he can somehow pair with Larry Fitzgerald, you know, I'm not sure how well he's going to translate to the outside if you have Fitz inside, but they need some help in that room, and he clearly can give that to them.
Well, here's Christian Kirk on his strengths in his own scouting report.
You know, yards after the catch, you know, once I get the ball in my hands, just to be able to naturally just get everything I can out of it and be able to make guys miss and then, you know, go score. Take a lot of pride in that. And it just comes natural to me. And I think it's a huge part of, you know, being a great wide receiver.
I will say in that NFL Network segment, Jim Mora went on and everybody had to identify their sleeper, their value pick in the draft. And he immediately went with Christian Kirk and said, look, having gone against him, having recruited him, this kid is going to make an impact in the NFL. And then it was interesting because Charlie Casserly and Lance Zierlein were on the set. They both immediately chimed in that they had Christian Kirk as a first round pick.
Yeah, he's a guy, he didn't quite have the elite speed of a first rounder, and he's not tall, so it makes sense for him to be more of a slot guy. So it makes sense why he was a second round pick as opposed to a first. But you also look at him and say, okay, this guy he's got good hands, he's super polished, he's always been a playmaker. It might be a situation where he does become a very good receiver pretty quickly, because he might not have those combine measurables, these elite things that people love, but you think of almost an Anquan Boldin type, where you're just a really, really good football player. And I think Christian Kirk is motivated, much like Josh Rosen, to come in and show that.
He just makes people miss. I mean, the highlights I've seen on Christian Kirk, and that was Q. Remember Q in his prime? What was a game against Jacksonville, game against the Niners? He seemingly missed like nine guys missed tackles on like a 40-yard touchdown catch and run.
Yeah, and I don't want anybody to kind of get sideways here. They're not the same type of player.
No, not the physical type of player.
But at the same time, I see where you guys are going with this, and I agree with this. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, even Jerry Rice, who was a first-round pick, you know, he didn't have elite speed when he came out, but he had game speed and he had playmaking speed. And again,
and he outran Daryl Green on Monday Night Football once.
when you look at this draft and what they were trying to do, and again, it's kind of how the board fell. Like I said, I do think they would have gone defense in that second round if it had fallen right. But to be able to get a couple of things that help this offense, I mean, you need to help this offense. And if you add Christian Kirk to an offense with Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson, And then you say Sam Bradford's healthy, and as long as you get some kind of offensive line play, it gets very intriguing very quickly.
All right, how about the head coach, Steve Wilks, on the role of Christian Kirk?
Has he played inside? Yes. Can he play outside? Yes, he can. So we're going to move our guys around. We're going to put him in a position to be successful. I think he's going to bring a lot. The guy's smart. He's going to be able to pick up the offense quickly. He dedicates himself to his craft.
Just like Josh Rosen, who started game one as a true freshman for UCLA, anybody happen to remember Christian Kirk's first game against ASU?
I watched it.
Two touchdowns.
Painful.
So, you know, Darren was just reliving some of the Saguaro Chaparral pain when it came to ASU and A&M. Yeah.
Although,
you know,
to be fair, when I was in high school, way back in the Stone Age, both Chaparral and Saguaro were terrible football programs. Oh, okay. So,
Christian Kirk,
we were basketball
born.
Schools okay. then.
All right. So, how ready is Christian Kirk? We know he's ready to start his college career as a true freshman. What about as a rookie in the NFL?
I think I'm 100% ready. I know that's why Mr. Bidwill and, you know, Mr. Keim and Coach Wilks drafted me. Because they wanted me to come in and play and to help win games. And at the end of the day, that's what I'm here to do. Whatever way I have to do it, whether it's special teams, playing wide receiver, I'm just here to help win games.
And I brought up Rosen and Kirk because they actually came up together. They're the same class, correct? And I know you guys have posted some social media and some stuff on azcardinals.com. There's one photo of them at like an all-star camp.
Yeah, and Christian Kirk said that he got to know Josh Rosen at the all-star camps. All these top recruits kind of get to talking and texting, and they took an official visit to UCLA together, considered being kind of a package deal and going to play there together. Obviously, Kirk went to A&M, but he had always kept that in his mind. They would always text with each other. They played each other twice in college and caught up, and Kirk was thinking, hey, maybe this can happen in the NFL.
All right, well, here's the rookie receiver on his rookie quarterback.
We were real close during recruiting. We were both, you know, talking about going to UCLA together early off in, our recruitment process. And then we actually took our official visit to UCLA together and spent a lot of time. We stayed in touch, you know, throughout college, and then obviously playing against him my last 2 years. He's an awesome player, and in my opinion, is the best quarterback in this draft.
If nothing else, there's a lot more intrigue to the second half of the preseason games. Put it that way. You know, whether it's Josh Rosen and, you know, Kirk, I'm sure will get some run probably with the first team, maybe, you know. But, there'll be a reason to hang around after halftime for a preseason game. Put it that way.
That's true. And again, no, even if the Cardinals don't get the wins that they want this year, when you have a rookie quarterback and when you start talking about some of these young offensive players like Christian Kirk, it changes the dynamic a little bit how you're watching it. You know, the last couple of years, you know, the fans base, and rightfully so, they're looking at a mature team that had a great season in 2015, and you already had the fun climb up the mountain, which was, you know, kind of 13, 14, 15, and almost, and you're hoping to kind of get over it. And it reminded me a little bit of like 2009 with after the Super Bowl run. The Cardinals actually won more games in 2009 than they did in 2008. They had a 10-win season.
True, yeah.
But the vibe was different because now if you don't win the Super Bowl, it's a disappointment. And so the bar is so much higher. And I think that's where this team's been the last couple of years. Now things kind of get readjusted and you're trying to get the young guys. And now it's that fun part of, yeah, you got to get to the point where you win some games at some point, but it's the kind of the fun run up to it where you see this team get better, hopefully, and kind of build towards that. And that brings with it a whole different feeling than maybe we've had the last couple of years.
And guess what? If your starting quarterback goes down, knock on wood, let's hope that doesn't happen. But if he does, then it's not the same feeling as years past when Carson Palmer went down. Because now, guess what? You get to see the first-round rookie.
Yeah.
Presumably, they get him into the game. And now, guess what? There's just as much intrigue, if not more. It's compelling instead of the energy sort of going out of the season and everybody wondering, oh, boy, you know, the offseason starts now. You know, there's none of that when you have a rookie quarterback.
I mean, there were people excited about Blaine Gabbert and him getting
That's
his
true.
Shot. And he was a veteran journeyman who hadn't done it. So with Rosen, even if Sam Bradford plays reasonably well early on, there's going to be a lot of people clamoring for Rosen to play.
All right, well, keeping your quarterback healthy, that was another objective in this draft. It's a big reason why they took Mason Cole out of Michigan in round 3. Here's the head coach, Steve Wilks.
I love his toughness, his leadership. Doing our research and talking to a lot of guys that I know at the University of Michigan, they stood on the table for this young man. You know, he jumps off at you on film. The DNA that we talk about, he's smart, he's physically tough. He's gritty. He loves the game, and you can see it on tape.
Speaking of tape, do we have the clip from last week where I said the Cardinals' sleeper pick will be a center sometime in like round three or four?
There you go.
Can I cite that around here?
Didn't you bet Darren that lunch that you'd get that?
Negative.
Yeah, I think it's a wash. You're absolutely right, Kyle. We don't have it. Just take our word for it, Darren. It's somewhere on that tape in there. Let me get this straight. He started as a true freshman at tackle at Michigan. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
So think about the first three picks. They're all starters, high impact players at major programs as true freshmen.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's pretty remarkable.
And
especially as a tackle, as an offensive lineman.
Well, I mean, again, they did a very nice job in terms of how it graded out and where these fall. I mean, again, we're not talking about a normal third round pick either. They traded their regular third round pick, so this is their comp pick. This is the pick they got for losing Calais Campbell. So it was after the normal 32 picks of the third round. So we're talking deep in the third round to be able to get a guy like that. And you know, again, we'll see. No one's proclaiming him to be Pro Bowl material at this point, but a lot of people think he can be a solid starter.
Well, and we saw the difference when Evan Bame tried to challenge A.Q. Shipley. It comes down to being able to execute the game mentally at center. You know, you're the quarterback of the offensive line, and A.Q., among other ways, I mean, he just proved to be so superior in his experience and his knowledge and knowing the game, and the quarterback's got to trust you.
Yeah, and Mason Cole does have experience, and he comes from Michigan, where Jim Harbaugh was obviously running a very pro-style offense, a lot of stuff from the NFL, so Mason Cole thinks that helps him a lot. Knowing what he learned the last few years, it'll still probably take him time to transition to the NFL. And they do have it set up where he probably isn't going to be needed to start right away. But if there is an injury and he plays well, all of a sudden he is an option on the interior.
All right. In the fourth round, this is probably the biggest eye opener to me. I know, you know, when they made the pick, running back, interesting and sort of similar measurables, at least in terms of size and stature, to a TJ Logan. Now, I know they're different players. TJ Logan described by Steve Keim as having more straight line speed. And then there's Chase Edmonds. And, well, we'll let Keim describe him.
The guy has tremendous run skills, great lateral quickness, avoidability in space, great vision. And everybody from top to bottom was excited about him. As a matter of fact, he visited with Josh Rosen and went to dinner with us and fit in quite well.
I will say that every time Steve Keim talks about a draft pick, he sounds like the scout that he is.
That
sounds straight out of a draft guide when he first talks about him.
Yeah, no. And there's a lot to talk about with Chase Edmonds. I mean, he had a game where he ran for over 350 yards where he had less than 20 carries. It was like 21 yards a carry or something absurd.
Yeah, very, very low-level competition, but he tore up the competition at Fordham. And like you said, it's an interesting pick because you have David Johnson and you have TJ Logan, who is similar size, but it seemed to be the best player available in mold where they think, let's just get this guy on the field and let him have the ball in his hands. And it's the same thing with Christian Kirk too, where Kirk is probably going to be successful in the slot. Larry Fitzgerald's in the slot right now. You have to work that out. You have to work out where to put Edmonds. But it seems like they just want to find guys that they think are dangerous with the ball in their hands. And then you kind of work it out, different packages, different things you can do. But you just want as much talent as you can on offense.
Yeah, five of the six picks are obviously offensive guys. Steve Keim explained that when it was their time to pick on the board, the offensive guys were rated so much farther ahead than the defense guys. Now, can you contend that offense was worked in as a need, part of the rating system in the top 120, so inherently it was built in?
Maybe, but I mean, I don't think there's any question that after quarterback and a franchise quarterback, the biggest need was probably cornerback. And obviously they didn't go there until the sixth round with Chris Campbell. And so there has to be something about the board thing being there because, otherwise – I would think that you would have looked a lot more carefully at that position.
All right. Well, speaking of, in the sixth round out of Penn State, a guy who stands 6'1", weighs 195, Chris Campbell, the GM Steve Keim.
Chris Campbell, he is a guy that has played inside and outside. He's a long corner, 6'1", 200 pounds, and he ran well. He's got great athleticism, change of direction, the ability to play off and play press coverage. So he's got a lot of versatility for us, and we think he can certainly contribute on special teams.
This would seem to be in Steve Wilks' wheelhouse, would he not, right? Sort of the lower round DB. with the measurables, the skills. Yeah. I mean, Wilkes has spent the last 20 years getting the most out of those guys in a secondary.
Yeah, I mean, you can't teach some of the things that he has. So like you said, if you believe in your coaching and if you believe in your ability to get the most out of guys, it's great to start with this kind of skill set where you know this guy is fast enough and tall enough and his arms are long enough to really be a problem for wide receivers if he can get down all the technical things and refine everything he needs to do at corner. It's a big question because you are talking about a very late round pick and a lot of these guys don't pan out, but Wilkes certainly has the track record of making guys do.
And speaking of skills that you can't teach, Corey Cunningham, the final pick in the seventh round, an offensive lineman, 6'6", 311, former basketball player with a 36-inch vertical. A lot of his numbers that he had at his pro day would have stacked up very well at the combine with other offensive linemen. He wasn't invited.
A large man, clearly.
Yes, indeed. In fact, you know, if you want to go large picture, right, hit zoom out, big picture, here's the head coach Steve Wilkes on the progress this team has made since he was hired.
You go back to January 22nd when I was hired. There was questions, you know, here's a guy with no NFL head coaching experience. You have no quarterback on the roster. The offensive line has a lot of holes. There's a lot of questions about this team. Sight is totally different from vision. You got to sometimes see past the difficulties. We had a plan. We had a vision. We got better.
All right, give me one big question mark right now. Effective immediately. You can still get a guy off the street, obviously. There are a lot of still ways to acquire players. But, Darren Urban, what's your biggest single question right now as we continue with the offseason?
I mean, it's got to be the number two cornerback spot. It's got to be. I mean, they drafted the one cornerback late, and I do think that Steve Wilkes' ability to develop guys plays into it, and I think they've got a couple of undrafted rookies that they're intrigued with seeing how they work out. But until that is answered, you know, you got to wonder, is Steve Keim going to look at cornerback as we get later, another, you know, a Tremont Williams or an Antonio Cromartie or whomever? And I'd have to look to see exactly who's out there and
maybe
who's healthy.
DRC is out there, is he not?
Yeah.
DRC, the guy who the Giants were talking about playing at safety. So I get a little worried about where his wheels are at this point.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. All right. What do you think, Kyle, the biggest question mark you think?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree, number two corner. I think another one, I think the personnel is here now at wide receiver, but exactly how that shakes out, because Christian Kirk isn't your traditional outside guy, does he make enough of an impact where he can go on the outside and play out there? Do you try to have Fitz play a little bit on the outside so Kirk can be in the slot? Does Bryce Butler earn that outside spot and Christian Kirk is maybe kind of this jack-of-all-trades fill-in as more of a third or fourth wide receiver? Because I think J.J. Nelson as your third on the outside makes sense, but to me, who is that number two guy? Is Kirk going to elevate himself immediately, or are some of these other guys on the roster going to make a push?
I guess I'll go with tight end. I mean, you got. I'm just like, okay, what do you have there? What is it? So unproven right now.
And that would be after, for me, that's after cornerback. Yeah.
I mean, I would definitely go corner first and receiver still. You know, here's the other one I'll throw out there. 9-0, Robert Kimdichie. If he underwhelms, that could be a problem. To me, if you're sure. It isn't necessarily who, it's what. What do you have in Robert Kimdichie? I think that is a huge question facing this team right now, because if he delivers on all that talent, then okay, you know, that checks a big box. If he doesn't, now you have some uncertainty along that defensive front.
And especially this year with the emergence of Olsen Pierre, that if Robert Kimdichie doesn't show up, he's not even going to get much of an opportunity. He might be in the rotation, but you don't need him as a starter because of what Pierre has done. You've got Corey Peters and Pierre there. So like you said, I mean, if he doesn't look good in the offseason, he might be fighting just to get on the field.
By the way, when Steve Keim said that Chase Edmonds reminds them of somebody and then he stopped himself short and he didn't name
that's
names.
That's a great question.
Darren Sproles. I'm thinking Darren Sproles. Who was he thinking of when Chase Edmonds, he didn't want to say it?
I mean, I like Darren Sproles, but the way Steve Keim kind of built that out, it seems like it's going to be a bigger name.
We need sources on that.
When I heard horizontal cuts, I thought Shady McCoy. I know how.
Barry Sanders.
Oh, there you go. Brian Westbrook, Jim Omohundro says, is what they said on TV.
I guess it would all depend on what Steve Keim believes is a big name.
And they raved about his receiving skills.
That's true.
And Brian Westbrook was, I mean, he was very talented as a receiver.
If you can be close to any of those guys, the Cardinals would be really happy.
Le'Veon Bell.
David Johnson.
David Johnson.
Hey, Kyle, how expensive are Darren's tastes for lunch, by the way? When am I in store? Do I need to start saving? Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, you better get your checkbook ready.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that check might bounce. All right, that'll do it for Cardinals Underground.